You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
I do go on. That's the luxury when it's a podcast. When you write advice in a column, you can't address the problem from every single angle. The temptation when you have the sort of endless potential space of a podcast and all of the internet to fill up with your words is examining the problem from every possible angle. And I've been challenged by my listeners. Some listeners like it when I go on and on and on about a single question. Some listeners sometimes think I go on too long, and a listener threw down the gauntlet a few years ago and challenged me to do what we called the 1 Minute Wonder Show, where questions were limited to a minute. My answers, because it's my show, I had 2 minutes for my answers. I haven't done a 1 Minute Wonder Show in a while, but we are doing another 1 Minute Wonder Show today, where I will tackle your questions in 2 minutes or less, just as I tackled today's intro to today's show in exactly 1 minute. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Blue Apron. Check out this week's menu and get $60 off at blueapron.com/savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is sponsored by OMG Yes, videos that explore new ways to increase sexual pleasure based on new scientific research. Get a discount on the new second season at omgyes.com/savage. That's omgyes.com/savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Bull and Branch, luxury, affordable, fair trade certified sheets. Get $50 off a set of sheets plus free shipping by going to bullandbranch.com and entering Savage.
Dan, pregnancy websites advise that blowing air into the vagina may cause air emboli during pregnancy. Who is blowing air in vaginas? My wife's not pregnant anymore. She wants to know if I should blow air in her vagina. Is that a thing? Why is it on so many pregnancy sites?
I don't know who is blowing air into vaginas, but I know who was at risk of blowing air into a vagina once upon a time. Me, because my older brother told me when I was a child that a blowjob is when a man blows into a woman's vagina to inflate it so he can get his dick in there. That's what passed for sex education at St. Jerome's grade school, at least when it's coming out of the mouth of my older brother, Eddie. Don't blow into women's vaginas, pregnant or not. It can cause an air embolism, which is an air bubble in the bloodstream, if there is a tear. And there is sometimes a tear, and pregnant women are particularly at risk for those kinds of tears in the placenta, in the vaginal canal. So yeah, don't blow into a vagina. Not that anybody is blowing into a vagina, because nobody, not even me, I wasn't even dumb enough to take my older brother Eddie's advice about cunnilingus when I was in fifth grade.
Hey, Dan, why do you think that the fandom of Drag Race and drag queens, which is comprised mainly of gay men, is so toxic?
I imagine the fandom for Drag Race is as toxic as it is for the same reason why academic politics are so vicious, as Henry Kissinger allegedly once observed. Academic politics are so vicious precisely because the stakes are so low. I think the same applies in Drag Race land. This is a contest. It's a beauty pageant and a talent show, and people get really invested in it. And then, you know, that gay male and certainly drag queenie-ish propensity for reading people, opening the library, spilling the tea, all of that can metastasize into some toxic, shitty behavior. But there are toxic, shitty fans as a part of every fandom out there. You want to see other kinds of toxic, shitty fans? Other species? Go to a football game. Go to a professional wrestling match. Go to a Trump rally. There's plenty of toxic, shitty people out there. And I don't think as a percentage, they're overrepresented in Drag Race fandom.
Hey, Dan. How soon is too soon to say I love you? Especially if you feel like the feeling is mutual, and especially if you're not exactly super young, say like over 30. I mean, is there even really a way to quantify it? Like, think about long-term couples who say that they knew right away that this was their person. I don't think that there's necessarily a right or wrong answer. Just want to know your thoughts.
It's never too soon to say I love you unless it's too soon to say I love you. It is really subjective. I think you guys hear me talk about this a lot, that this is one of those arenas where people are assessing your judgment. And it can spook someone. Everybody understands that. It can spook someone to hear I love you so early in the relationship that they feel pressured to respond in kind. They feel pressured to make even an emotional commitment to the relationship that they may be still assessing whether they want to make and weighing the pros and cons of. Saying I love you really puts that other person on the spot, and you don't want to do that too soon. Even if you're feeling it, even if you suspect that they're feeling it, it is possible to acknowledge strong feelings without slapping that I love you label on it, which can unnerve people. Not just because I'm not necessarily feeling it yet, I don't want to say it yet, I feel pressured to say it now, but it can unnerve people in that good judgment zone around, even though I'm kind of feeling it, that they said it on the seventh date indicates bad judgment on their part. Am I actually falling in love with somebody with terrible judgment, with bad judgment and low emotional IQ? That's a little scary. You can spook someone who's actually developing feelings for you into doubting those feelings for you by rolling that out too soon. As for that I knew right away stuff, unfortunately, I can't give you a perfect time when to say it. The 44th date, the third month. There's no perfect time. You have to use your best judgment in the moment. As for that new right away thing that you hear from couples who've been together a long time, they are backdating that new right away thing. They may have had a hunch early on that this person might be someone that they could be with forever or might be their person, but they had that hunch about a lot of different people, and then they got rid of those people, and so they don't have to own that. But I promise you they had that hunch about more than one person. All they're doing with the partner they're with now is revising that hunch to a certainty.
Hi, Dan. Maybe you can clear up this question with your access to doctors, but what's the actual truth about mixing poppers and Viagra? I had to swear on like everything holy that I did not use poppers to get on Viagra, but then I show up at a group sex event and it's like they hand them out like candy. Did they give you Viagra on the way in the door and start passing around bottles of poppers? How bad is it to do that? The warning is don't square with my anecdotal experience, and I want to know if I should take it more seriously or not.
There are a lot of people out there who mix poppers and Viagra, and that is a bad idea. It won't automatically kill you. It's not like lighting a fuse and the bomb goes off, but it puts you at risk, particularly if you have a heart condition, if you have low blood pressure, because poppers and Viagra both lower your blood pressure and cause a lot of blood to rush to your brain, and it forces your heart to work harder. And if you have a weak heart, and you may not know you have a weak heart until it's too late, if you have a weak or compromised heart, the mixture can be lethal. Now, it's not common. It can be lethal. It might kill you. You'll find plenty of people out there who mixed poppers and Viagra who are not dead, just like you can find plenty of people out there who got drunk and drove somewhere and didn't kill anybody and are not dead themselves. You can find people who smoked two packs of cigarettes a day for 70 years and they're 90 now and they are not dead. Doesn't mean it wasn't a risk just because individual results may vary. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by OMGYes.com, a website devoted to women's sexual pleasure. In partnership with Indiana University and Kinsey Institute researchers, OMGYes has interviewed and surveyed thousands of women about what's made their pleasure better, physical techniques, the psychological techniques, and ways of guiding their partners so that they can experience pleasure or more pleasure during sex. The findings are peer-reviewed and published. This is science. They are doing data. They're not just winging it. And all of this research and data and science is brought to life in fun, honest videos featuring regular women sharing stories from their own experiences about what works for them and what might work for you. I've watched a bunch of these videos. They're really great. I think they're really valuable. I think they're a tremendous resource, and I think you should check them out. One of the things their research has found is how easy it is for us to blunt or cut off our own explorations when we think things like, I've already got techniques that work for me, I'm good. But finding out what works for other people can help you find new things, bonus things, additional things that work for you. Indiana University School of Medicine researchers actually did a study giving OMG yes to 1,000 women and their partners. 96% realized there's actually more room in their lives for sexual pleasure, more room for growth. OMG yes is not a subscription. Each batch of content is a one-time payment, like buying a book, that you keep and own forever. And your contribution goes on to fund future pleasure research at IU and the Kinsey Institute. Learn more about the study at omgyes.com. And our listeners get a discount at omgyes.com/savage. Do yourself a favor. Do us a favor. Support the Lovecast by going to omgyes.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I'll make it short. 25-year-old straight female here. Call and ask if it's fair/okay for me to get upset when my boyfriend rejects having sex with me. It always feels pretty shitty, but I also don't want to be rapey and make him feel like he has to.
It's fine to be disappointed when you're horny and you hit on your partner and you try to initiate sex and they don't want to have sex. You have to feel your feelings. What you don't want to do is weaponize your feelings. You don't want to manipulate or guilt your partner into having sex that they don't want to have. The bigger issue here, though, is are you two sexually compatible? Does he generally want sex at roughly the same clip that you want sex? Or is there something sexist going on here where he finds it emasculating or finds it somehow not feminine for you or not attractive for you to initiate sex, for you to ask for sex? Some men do find that off-putting. And you know what you do with those men? You put them off. You put them out. You get rid of them because you don't want to be with someone who doesn't not just respect your sexual agency and your desires, but is excited about your sexual agency and excited about not just your desires, but being desired by you. So this sadness that you talk about, does it go deep? Is it indicative of a flaw in the relationship, a fatal flaw potentially in the relationship, a sign that you two just aren't sexually compatible? Or is there a workaround? Are you a mixed match, low libido, high libido couple? And rather than him shutting you down when you want to have intercourse and he doesn't, is he willing to give you the masturbatory assist that sometimes people with the lower libido can do for their partners with the higher libido in a mixed libido relationship, where you bust out the vibrator and he holds you and plays with your tits and whispers a few dirty things in your ear while you take care of yourself? If he's willing to go there, then when you initiate sex and he's not up for it or not feeling it, you can still get off and you won't feel so deprived and therefore won't feel so sad. If he's willing to accommodate, make this work, and put in a little bit of effort when you need to get off. If he's not, yeah, maybe you need to get out.
Hey, Dan, I'm a female in her 30s in the South, and I love sounding, especially performing on me. I was wondering if you could help me understand why there's so much instantaneous fear of it, especially from people that have never heard of it, and the complications that have happened with people who aren't careful, because obviously a lot can go wrong with anal or really any form of sex act. I know guys try to compare it to culture tests for STIs, but that's like me trying to compare sex to a pap smear. And all three guys who have agreed to let me do it have agreed that it was an irrational fear, and as a female, having it performed on me, it feels exactly like vaginal sex, but about 100 times more intense, and it's great. So I was wondering if you could maybe help clear that up.
For this question, we got Mistress Matisse, professional dominatrix, cannabis entrepreneur, and sex workers' rights activist to come in and tackle it with me. Hey, thanks for coming back.
Of course.
So sounding, we should probably say what it is.
Sounding is a wonderful practice that I much enjoy, and it involves inserting an object, such as a catheter, into someone's urethra.
Or a metal rod. That's usually what you see in like sounding porn, or these steel rods that are surgical, that are made for this purpose. And it's, some people have scars in your urethras, and they have to stretch their urethras back open. So it's got a legitimate medical purpose.
Yes, it does.
But some people think it's sexy to have a metal rod shoved up their dick or shoved into their urethra if they're a lady.
They are a small but wonderful group of people, and I love them very much. But yeah, people who don't like it, it's rare to kind of convert someone to sounding when they don't immediately have a kind of cool reaction to it. But you can try. But it is a niche fetish. And so she's always going to have to probably kind of seek for that if that's what she's seeking. I would encourage her to be careful herself because it's much easier for a woman to get a UTI than a man, and putting a catheter into yourself if it's not used with sterile lube and used in.
If bacteria gets all the way up your urethra into your bladder, you can get a UTI. It's very painful for women. The bladder is further away, further up the urethra for the dude with the dick, of course. And
right.
So you have a little more latitude sounding wise than a woman might.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's like 7 or 8 inches in a man and like 4 in a woman.
It is a niche fetish, like you say. I don't think it's something that you can talk someone into being into, but it's not that painful.
It's not. No, it's definitely not that painful at
all. People look at that and think that must hurt like hell.
It really doesn't.
And it doesn't. And I'm not going to tell you how I know that. Not my thing, but I'm not going to tell you how I know that.
I have done it to thousands of people and they have all been fine. And yeah, they have enjoyed it, many of them.
But you're going to have to look far and wide for partners, even kinky people. Even if you're like meeting people in dungeons and at play parties, only 1 in 1,000 that she's met 3 guys who were down.
Right. That was, I would maybe not more than that. Maybe 1 in 100, 1 in 100.
But she's doing pretty good if she's met 3 guys who are down.
If you like, if you tell a man that like, this will turn me on sexually if you do this, they'll try a lot of things at least once.
Thanks, Matisse.
Thanks, Dan.
Finally, summer is here, and that means I can get down to trying some new hot weather recipes, like fresh basil fettuccine or seared tilapia with lemon caper sauce. Did I come up with these ideas myself? No. Blue Apron came up with these ideas for me. You, like me, can experience the joy of cooking something new, trying new-to-you techniques and making cooking fun again, or fun for the first time, which is what Blue Apron did for me, and they can do it for you. And with an ever-changing mix of meat, fish, and vegetarian recipes to choose from, it'll be a very tasty summer. I didn't used to like cooking, but now I kind of love cooking because Blue Apron has exposed me to delicious recipes I wouldn't have thought to even consider attempting. But with Blue Apron, the hard parts are done for me. Cooking isn't a burden. In fact, it's actually really a pleasure to learn these new kitchen skills with each meal. And because of my hectic schedule, I feel like I have no other choice than to eat out a lot more than I should. But with Blue Apron coming to the house on the regular, I actually have time to cook a delicious, wholesome meal instead of relying on takeout because they did all the legwork in advance and a lot of the prep work for me. Blue Apron's chef-designed recipes include amazing specialty sauces and premium ingredient blends that would be otherwise difficult, expensive, or really time-consuming to source for yourself at the grocery store or make. The test kitchen's whole goal at Blue Apron is to make dinner more accessible, exciting, and delicious than ever. To start making delicious, brag-worthy meals at home without the hassle, try Blue Apron. Check out this week's menu and get $60 off when you visit blueapron.com/savage. $60 off. Go to blueapron.com/savage now. Get some delicious food and support the Lovecast. blueapron.com/savage. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Hi, Dan. I am a 19-year-old woman living in Canada, and I'm in love with my roommate, and I don't know what to do. Any advice you have would be awesome. I don't know how they feel about it, but me and we have one other roommate sharing the house with us. So, yeah.
The worry here is that it could get awkward. If you go to your roommate and say, I have a crush on you, you're 19 years old, you probably just met this person, you are not in love with this person, you are attracted to this person. Don't round it up to love so quickly. But if you go to your roommate and say, I'm really kind of attracted to you, I'd like to ask you out on a date, be unambiguous when you're asking somebody out, it's a date, not let's hang out sometime. They might not be into you in the same way that you're into them, and then you will have been rejected and you will have feelings about that and you will have to see them every day and it'll feel like a fresh rejection every day until you burn through this crush. So rather than go to your roommate and hit on your roommate, you can suss out your other roommate, although that can be awkward for your other roommate too, then to know that you're feeling this way about the third roommate, or you can just wait a little bit till you're not roommates anymore. The world is full of people who hooked up with roommates. The world is full of couples who met in roommate situations. I'm not telling you you can't ask them out. In fact, indeed, I did just acknowledge that you could ask them out, just to ask them out unambiguously. But then you're going to have to face down some awkwardness if the answer is no. Or if you guys have a brief affair and it ends badly or just ends, and you know what? Most sexual relationships, most romantic relationships do end, then it'll be extra double awkward that you guys are roommates and you dated for a little bit and then it ended. But you know what? There's no relationships, there's no sex, there's no intimacy, there's no connection without some awkwardness. Even when it works, even when you get together and you stay together, there's still going to be moments of awkwardness that you're going to have to power through. And you can power through these moments of awkwardness to get into your roommate's pants.
Hi, Dan, tech-savvy at-risk youth, and Nancy. I noticed that you are coming up close on show number 666. I'm wondering if you're planning on doing anything special for that show, Satan questions and Satanists and Satan worshipers, anything, any kind of focus for that particular special number show?
We are going to do something special for episode 666. Thanks to you, caller, for letting us know that episode was coming up. We famously forgot to do a Let's Get Stoned and Get Sex Advice episode of the Savage Lovecast when we hit 420. But we're not going to make that mistake with episode 666. We have a very special guest lined up for that show that I think you are going to appreciate. And that episode is going to be special and 666 themed, thanks to you. People ask me a lot of personal questions, but right now I am going to ask you a personal question. It is about your bed. It is about your sheets. Is your bed glamorous enough? Are your sheets soft enough? Are they? Because if you aren't sleeping on Boll & Branch sheets, then I think the answer is no. Everything Boll & Branch makes, from bedding to blankets, is made from pure 100% organic cotton, which means they start out super soft and they get even softer over time. You buy directly from Boll & Branch, so you're essentially paying wholesale prices. Luxury sheets can cost up to $1,000 in the store, but Boll & Branch sheets are only a couple of $100. Everyone who tries Boll & Branch sheets loves them. That's why they have thousands of five-star reviews. And Boll & Branch only uses sustainable and responsible methods of sourcing and manufacturing. And they donate a portion of every sale to help fight human trafficking while preserving fair prices for consumers. And new sheets are arguably the best gift imaginable. Wouldn't you want someone you sleep with to give you new, beautiful sheets? So do it for them before they do it for you, because you are running out of time. Shipping is free, and you can try them for 30 nights. If you don't love them, send them back for a refund. But I doubt you'll want to send them back. There's no risk and no reason to not give Boll & Branch sheets a try. To get you started right now, my listeners get $50 off your first set of sheets at bollandbranch.com when you use the promo code SAVAGE. That's B-O-L-L and branch.com, promo code SAVAGE. bollandbranch.com, promo code SAVAGE.
Hey, Dan, I was just curious, because when I masturbate, and even with a partner, I can come pretty easily with a vibrator. It takes a little longer without it, but like my orgasms usually last like 10 seconds to 30 seconds. But I hear about some women who have these like 3, 4, or 5 minute long orgasms. And I was just wondering how you get to that point of having a longer orgasm.
The secret to a longer and more intensely felt orgasm is a longer build. Now, a lot of women are capable of having more than one orgasm. Sometimes those 5 minute orgasms you hear about are a series of orgasms, because the woman keeps going, keeps powering through the intensity of the sensations and the sensitivity, and drives home, drives herself to, or her partner drives her to, another orgasm. But that can be difficult for some women, because it tingles too much, that it trips from a delicious and intense sensation into a painful almost sensation. Not every woman is capable of that kind of stack of orgasms. But if you want to extend the already pretty decent 30-second orgasms you're having and double or quadruple or triple or quintuple the time, bigger buildup. Find those plateaus. Edge yourself. Bring yourself almost to the point of orgasm. Back off a little bit. Slow down a little bit. Bring yourself back to the brink. Find where your point of orgasmic inevitability is, and tiptoe almost all the way up to it again and again and again and again. And when you do finally have that orgasm, when you allow yourself in this edging session to go over the edge, it will be much more intense and much more long-lasting. Also, if you're using a vibrator externally and you're just hitting the glands of your clitoris, you have a lot more clitoral tissue that's buried inside you. Clitoral wings, clitoral roots. You can hit some of that clitoral tissue, basically the equivalent of the shaft of a man's penis, with penetration, with a vibrator that goes in you, with a vibrator, a vibrating butt plug that goes up your butt. It's possible that engaging more of your clitoris than you are at the moment could result in longer lasting and more intense orgasms.
Hey, Dan. what is the status of the word faggot or fag? Has it gone the way of the word queer, where anyone can use it and it's, you know, never perceived to be offensive? Or is it still considered a slur and you can use it and your gay friends can use it amongst yourselves, but straight people can't? Let me know what you think.
Straight people can't, but of course do use that word. They can't use it. They use it all the time, usually in a hateful way. Faggot among gay men is a little bit like the N-word among African Americans. It is a sign of in-group understanding and fellowship and an acknowledgement of our shared experience of oppression and the way that word is used unaffectionately. And when we flip it on its head and use it affectionately with each other, it means something different. And it means something different when it comes from one gay man to another gay man. And for a lot of gay men, it's a really hot word when it's incorporated into sex. But it's not a word that straight people get to use or get to say to their gay friends. You will get the same icy fucking reception or pushback, loud, argumentative, perhaps even physical pushback, from a gay dude if you use that word in the same way. And I'm not drawing an equivalency between the F word and the N word, but you will get a pushback in the same way that you will get a pushback if you use the N word with African Americans. Even if they're using it amongst themselves, they're using it affectionately, that doesn't mean that white people have a right to use that word affectionately or otherwise.
Hey, Dan. Proud mom here of a bisexual girl who has a gorgeous soul. She's a junior. She has some friends of hers who are loud and proud like she is to me and a very small group of friends. Some of these kids don't come out at home because they're worried about getting kicked out of the house and parents' rejection, things like that. What resources can I say, here, go look at this site. Go find your tribe. Go live a great life with people who know, love, and understand you, and go be you.
Online, you can send these kids to the Trevor Project, which is a suicide prevention hotline. They also do a lot of support for LGBT kids, and they operate phone lines that are staffed 24/7, where LGBT kids, even if they're not suffering from suicidal ideation, can get a receptive ear and speak to a trained adult. There's also the It Gets Better Project, where they can find tons of video testimonials from other LGBT adults, not about how they sat on their asses waiting around for it to get better and then one day it did, but what they did to make it better, how they approached their families. There's a lot of really useful stuff in the It Gets Better Project. These kids who right now aren't able to be out to their parents, they can watch videos from people who weren't able to be out to their parents when they were their age and are out to their parents now, and their parents love and support them now, and find out exactly what strategies those now adult queers used in approaching their hostile, at the time, families. The most valuable resource those kids can have, in addition to a gay straight alliance or a gender and sexuality alliance at their high school or middle school, is an adult like you. You are the resource. You are the refuge. You are the image they have in their heads about who their parents could possibly be one day. And you are also the place where they can go and the home that they can enter, where they can relax and exhale and be themselves. So props to you. You may be the most important resource in these kids' lives, and you don't need to refer them to you. They've already got you.
Hi, Dan. My girlfriend squirts virtually every time we have sex. We usually do a good job spot cleaning it every time, but is that good enough? Is there some kind of pad or something you would recommend for us?
People recommend towels. People recommend rubber sheets. There are absorbent hospital pads. There are fuzzy blankets that you can buy online that are absorbent to throw down during sex. And a Savage Love reader is selling what she calls waterproof splash pads for squirting ladies. And you can find those at buyannarae.com. It's BYANNARAE.com, where they sell luxury sex towels and more, everything the squirting lady could ever want.
Hey, Dan. I had some anal skin tags that occurred from carrying children, and I'm out seeing, dating around, and I want to know when the best time to tell someone about it is. I haven't said anything, and I've let people discover it on their own, and I've also given people a warning before they go down there that things aren't quite as most people's booties should be. And I just want to know what you want to hear. You were with somebody who kind of was different down there. When would you want to hear it?
I would appreciate a heads up in this circumstance. And in this circumstance, I would give a heads up. Some people may get down there and find skin tags and worry that it's a sexually transmitted infection, that it's a HPV, or they may worry it's a hemorrhoid or it's causing you pain for them to be engaging with your anus, with your butthole and touching you. So in advance, letting them know, look, you know, I had a couple of kids, I have some skin tags as a result on my sphincters, and they don't hurt and they aren't a sexually transmitted infection and they're nothing you need to worry about. They're just a little glorious variation, because buttholes, like vulvas, like foreskins, like dicks, like balls, come in all sorts of different shapes and sizes, and some of them are more elaborately accessorized than others. And it's nothing for you to be ashamed of, but you don't want to cause your partner any undue worry for themselves or for you when they get down there. And you want to spare yourself the tension, I think, of their first reaction when they get to your butt. That's not a great time to explain when someone's in your ass what's up with your ass. Better give them a heads up in advance.
Hey, Dan, this is a mid-30s gay male in the South. And my question for the one-minute question show is just this. Are straight guys really that unable to find a clitoris? I've seen straight porn. Seems like the clit is pretty obvious. And yeah, just want to make sure that I'm not missing something.
Well, I never found one back when I was a teenager having sex with girls. And the reason I didn't find it is I wasn't particularly interested in finding it. And I think that's actually the issue for a lot of straight guys. They're not particularly interested in finding it, and therefore they cannot find it. That intersects, if I can use that word in this context, with so many young women arriving at partnered sex, never having masturbated, really never having explored their clit themselves, and not even realizing themselves how central their clit is going to be to their sexual pleasure, to their orgasmic response. So women don't center their clit during sex selfishly, and they have a right to be selfish and center themselves and their genitals during sex in the same way guys, of course, center their dicks during sex. Dick is regarded as pretty crucial and definitional to straight sex, whereas clit, which is slightly peripheral to straight sex, it's not in the vaginal canal, it's outside and above, can be disregarded, and straight sex can still, if you define straight sex as PIV to the point of his orgasm, it can still be successful without the clit ever being engaged. And, you know, a lot of young women arrive at partnered sex not thinking about their own clits, never having engaged with their own clits, not knowing how central engaging their clits is going to be for their pleasure, and expecting that they will come from PIV intercourse without any direct, intense, focused clitoral stimulation, a deftly placed vibrator, or a good grind. But that's all a long digression from your question. No, the clit is not that hard to find. And the reason guys claim they can't find it or have difficulty finding it is because they don't want to find it. And women let them get away with that.
Hey, Dan, a friend with benefits and I drifted apart years ago. You know, nothing happened, just, you know, just drifted apart. Life happens. They've recently come back into my zone, and they're very, very emotionally attached to me. And they're just assuming that we can pick back up where we left off. But however, I'm just not interested anymore. And I worry it would devastate them if I just, you know, told them that. So how do I shut them down without causing undue harm?
I'm sorry, but you're just going to have to fuck this person for the rest of your life to avoid hurting their feelings. Look, you don't have to fuck this person ever again. And you just have to be direct with this person and expect that they will handle this rejection. And it's a rejection. A rejection is always painful. And that they'll handle this little bit of rejection. It's a friends with benefits rejection. It's not, you know, you're not divorcing a spouse. They'll handle this rejection with some grace, even if it causes them to have feelings, that they will process those feelings and vent about those feelings, not to you, but to a vent appropriate pal. And whatever feelings they have about this rejection, and rejection is a part of everyone's intimate life and everyone's sex life, they're not your responsibility ultimately. And you can't fuck this person eternally to avoid them having a big sad about you not wanting to fuck them ever again. Just be direct and be honest and be kind. And directness and honesty in a circumstance like this is kindness, even if the person on the receiving end of this kind of direct and honest rejection can't immediately perceive the kindness in it. Nobody really wants to be pity fucked.
Hi, Dan. My question is really just about if you have a name for a particular sex act, which is the one I'm thinking of, is where one person is there and they're being fucked by a man or a person with a strap-on. The person doing the fucking there is also being fucked by a third person. And then this could go on forever. It would require at least 3 people for the sex act, but there could be 4 or 5 people. But each fucking and in turn being fucked in a line, like I would call this a train, but that as a word already exists for a different sex act where one person fucks many people in succession. So I was wondering if there's a word for that, or if your viewers could come up with one.
One person fucking many people in succession is called running a train. A line of people, each one fucking the person in front of them, is just called a train, not running a train. If it's just 3 people, the act is named for the person in the center, the person who is fucking and at the same time being fucked, and that person is called Lucky Pierre. And the act is, if it's just 3 people, just called, we did a Lucky Pierre, we pulled off a Lucky Pierre. Then if you say, I got Lucky Pierre last night, or we pulled off a Lucky Pierre, people will ask the obvious follow-up question, which is, well, who was Pierre? But they will know exactly what you mean by, I was in a Lucky Pierre last night. Then you get to tell them whether you got to be Pierre, whether you got lucky, or you were just one of the 2 people making Pierre feel so lucky and feel so special.
Hey, Dan, 27-year-old on the East Coast, cisgendered gay man here. My question is regarding dating and age. So I just got back from a date with a 19-year-old. I'm literally sitting in the driveway of my home. And I kind of thought, you know, hey, you know how most dates kind of just end in sex and, you know, we're fine. This wasn't. This was like, okay, we're having a very nice time. We kissed at the end and then he went home. And we've kind of gotten ourselves into a situation where we're going to see each other. We're in a theater show together. And I don't know. It seemed like we kind of left on a note like, oh, well, we're thinking about dating. Maybe I'm putting too much into it, but it just got to kind of me thinking like dating a 19-year-old, I'm 27. It's kind of like wrong societally, right? But why? And why is that wrong?
Some days I feel like we should just get it over with and rage the age of consent to 37. 19 years old. He is an adult. He can vote. A few decades ago, he could legally drink in this country. He can go off to war. He can kiss you in your car. He can sit on your dick if that's what he wants to do. It's not uncommon for 18, 19, 20-year-old gay guys to date guys, at least initially, who are a little bit older than they are, sometimes significantly older than they are. Sometimes they're legitimately attracted to older guys. Sometimes guys their age, most of them, many of them, aren't out, or not enough of them are out for there to be a selection. And it could be that circumstance threw you together. You're both adult gay men working on a play together, and you're attracted to each other. Need to take the age difference into account. You know, there's a big difference between 19 and 27, less of a difference between 27 and 36. So you need to be considerate and you need to obey the campsite rule. You need to leave him in better shape than you found him. But it's not impossible for a 19-year-old theater kid to date somebody from one of his plays a little bit older than he is, and for it to be a good experience for both people, even if it doesn't last forever. Just be cognizant of the power imbalance here because you're older and more experienced. Be considerate, be solicitous. You're sitting alone in your car having only kissed. Don't rush him, and you aren't rushing him. And if you're interested in dating him, take it at his pace. One of the ways you honor the campsite rule is not to mislead anyone or lie to anyone. If you're not interested in dating him, don't date him. Don't let him get some 19-year-old crush on you and fall for you if you are not in a position that you want him falling for or on you. But if you're into him and you could see this as a successful summer romance and perhaps something a little bit more open-ended than that, go for it. You're both adults.
Hey, Dan. This is a 29-year-old cis female from the Midwest. I just came from a second date. I had sex with a guy. I'm trying to, like, be sexually liberal because you're only young once and may as well. Sex was fine, but he came really quickly. I didn't even know he came, and he did not ask me if I had come after the fact. do I go on another date with him or not? Also, I realized I said sex was good, but I didn't come, so couldn't have been that great. Am I obligated to, like, try it again and use my words and say, hey, don't come until I do, or like, hey, you just came, want to get me off too? Or do I call it a loss and go out and find more fish in the sea?
You may not have realized that he came when he came, but he, of course, realized that he came when he came. And it sounds like he came early, and maybe he has a premature ejaculation issue, or maybe he was just a little bit overstimulated and overexcited to be with you. And because you didn't say anything and he didn't say anything, the shame monster from Big Mouth kind of rolled in. Instead of letting the shame monster roll in, don't give the shame monster any space. You have to say in that moment, hey, that's, you got off, I'd like to get off too. And just directly address the issue. He may, if he came really quickly, be one of those people who comes quickly and then just needs like 10 minutes of focusing on you and your pleasure before he's hard again and can come again and take longer to come the second time. Or he just may have told you that, he got a little carried away, got a little overexcited, tiptoed to the point of orgasmic inevitability, and got a little too close to it, closer than he usually gets. And you would have found out what was up with him. But what you would have learned that was so much more important was whether he's aware that a woman's orgasm is a thing and that a woman has a right to expect an orgasm from partnered sex. And you needed to advocate for yourself in that moment, not just to get the orgasm that you deserved, but to really get the intelligence on this guy that you need, whether you want to waste any more time or pussy on this guy. You could have determined that all in that instant. When you said, instead of saying nothing, you said instead, I'd like to get off. And if he acted like getting you off was a chore or a surprise, not somebody you want to see ever again. Even if he lasted for hours, not somebody you want to see ever again.
Hi, Dan. So this is more of a technical question. I work in an ER, and we occasionally have people coming in that have to have items extracted from their rectums. So can you give the public some information, some directions on how not to get things stuck in there, because they really don't want to have to come in and have these things extracted. Nobody wants that.
Yeah, you can't say that no one wants to come in and have these things extracted. I'm sure there are some people out there who like having things extracted. There are people with medical fetishes. I don't think it's okay for someone with a medical fetish to involve medical professionals in their kink without their consent. But yeah, you can't rule out the possibility that some of the people showing up in your ER did this to themselves on purpose because they are enjoying this trip to the ER, which is not okay. If you want to avoid that humiliating, embarrassing, annoying trip to the ER and the medical bills that will come as a consequence of it, even if you have healthcare coverage, the rule of thumb in your butt is a flared base. If you're going to put a dildo or a butt plug or any toy up your butt, use a toy designed for ass play, which is going to have a base flared, spread out, a big wide base that can't slip into your butt, that can't follow the dildo or butt plug the rest of the way into your anal cavity and then disappear. Flared bases, people. That's why they put balls on a lot of dildos, not just because everybody loves the sight of scrotum, because it creates a flared base. That's why on your better butt plugs, and there are some not so good butt plugs out there where the flared base is so small, it's not flared enough that you can get the whole thing up your butt if you're not careful. But it's why butt plugs have wide flared bases, to keep it from disappearing into your ass and to keep your ass out of the ER.
Hello, Dan. I have a question for you. I recently had anal sex for the first time, and it was with a man, and he ejaculated inside of me. And my question is it normal to have, like, blue stool, like, diarrhea after that? I'm just not sure if maybe, like, I had a reaction to his semen or to the lube, or maybe, I don't know, it was just, like, a mini enema with that stuff going inside of me. So I'm not really sure if that's normal, like if it's something I just need to get used to, or if it was like a weird reaction that my body had. Would appreciate some input. Thank you.
Occam's razor, Probably, if you used enough lube, he pumped a whole bunch of lube up inside you, as he should. You should err on the side of using tons of lube, particularly for your first experiences, and then for your subsequent experiences, continue using tons of lube. And then you're going to have to crap that lube out at some point, and it may mix with some fecal matter that was a little further up your lower GI, and so didn't engage during the anal, but is now washing out with the lubricant. That is a risk. You could also be allergic to his semen. Some people are allergic to other people's semen. They have allergic reaction to enzymes in other people's semen. There are people who, when they swallow their partner's semen, they get diarrhea. They get loose stools. Some people, if their partner, who have these sensitivities to particular people's semen, not everybody's semen, it's individual, they will break out in hives. Somebody will come on your chest, come on your stomach, and you'll get raised red welts. So that person will get raised red welts, and that's an allergic reaction to enzymes in the cum. It could be that you had an allergic reaction and his cum up your butt, if you didn't use a condom, loosened your stool in the same way it could have loosened your stool if you'd swallowed it and had the exact same allergic reaction. But you know what my money's on? My money's on, you had some poop way the fuck up there and he pumped a whole bunch of lube up you and it met halfway and mixed, and then you had to get rid of both at once and you perceived it as a loose stool. If you don't have this problem when you swallow his cum, it's unlikely that it was an allergic reaction. And I think as you get more experienced and more practiced in this and get more fiber in your diet, you won't have these loose stool reactions after anal. I'm out of town this week, so we're going to have to skip the tweets this week. Very sorry about that. Let's get right to your response calls.
Hi, Dan. This is a response call to episode 661 for the caller who had a openly religious, I guess more religious, coworker. If this person is in a managerial position or supervises these people, she could totally just kind of say, hey, we're wanting to show support for like the LGBT community, and maybe ask that each of her like subordinates or employees under her put up something for support if they feel comfortable. And so providing like a rainbow sticker or some sort of like rainbow paraphernalia that they don't have to necessarily take, but if they would like to, she can offer it to them. So if she feels uncomfortable about having a conversation with her coworker about maybe his Bible verses, she could definitely just kind of do a subtle nudge and say, hey, I got these rainbow stickers at Pride. I was wondering if you wanted any for your cubicle. I'm handing them out to her coworkers, something like that. It's a really kind of subtle way of doing things if she doesn't feel comfortable in terms of confrontation.
Hey, Dan and audience. Just wanted to say, I have a recommendation for everybody. Sort of DIY lube, especially for gay men. So highly recommend flaxseed gel. You'll see a lot of videos on it for hair care, but you take a quarter cup of flax seeds, you boil it in 2 cups of water, and it makes for an amazing water-based lubricant. Super cheap, good for you, no petrochemicals. All right, especially if you're doing anal sex, go for it.
Hi, Dan. This is in response to the person who was looking for real lesbian porn to watch with her partner. If you search for queer porn on sites like Pornhub, you will find actual lesbians performing actual sex acts, not to mention non-binary people and trans porn that is not sissy fetish stuff for straight guys. Also, check out cyberdyke.com. There's lots of resources there.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. And if you want us to read one of your tweets on the show, remember to use the hashtag Savage Lovecast. The deadline for entering my Dirty Little Film Fest hump is right around the corner. If you want to be part of the one and only porn festival made by the people, for the people, that celebrate sexual creativity in all forms of sexual and gender identity and expression, get humping. Grab your friends, grab your lovers, grab a camera. It can even be your phone and make a film 5 minutes or less for our festival. Go to humpfilmfest.com to find out more about the $20,000 in cash prizes and how you can submit your dirty little homies. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Justin Lay Miller on Twitter at Justin Lay Miller. And follow Mistress Matisse on Twitter at Mistress Matisse. And of course, be sure to listen to the Waves podcast. That's it. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week for an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.